Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey. Today's episode is a special edition of Bulletproof Radio. A good friend and mentor, Charles Poliquin, a man who has helped elite professional athletes and Olympians win hundreds of medals, who's been on the show, just passed away unexpectedly. And to honor his passing, I'd like to share episode 378 of Bulletproof Radio again in this special edition. Charles was one of the most knowledgeable biohackers I've ever met, a guy who I could call if there was something that I didn't know, and he'd probably know it, whether it was a bizarre Russian peptide or an unusual way to tell whether fat deposition in the belly was caused by hormones or something else. He was a wealth of knowledge and was always eager and willing to share it. And I had the great pleasure of supporting Charles on growing his own business and was just incredibly sad to hear of his passing. And we lost an amazing biohacker when he passed. So I wanted to share his amazing knowledge one more time in this episode. We talk about what happens to your brain when you put muscle on versus what happens when you do cardio, and a bunch of other things that also share his amazing sense of humor. I know that you will enjoy this episode. I enjoyed recording it, and I miss Charles.
Quick question for you. What makes you feel more invigorated, less stressed, and more in control of your body? The answer, more energy. Specifically, more quantum energy, because our bodies are quantum systems. Leela Quantum Tech has figured out a way to harness quantum energy so you can reach a state of vibrancy that you've probably never felt. Dozens of studies show that Leela Q's products neutralize the effects of harmful EMFs around us and even release positive energy that can improve your blood flow, optimize your heart rate, and other benefits. Leela Q has some heavy science backing it up. A recent study looked at people who use Leela Q for just 10 minutes. The study used a special blood illumination technique called dark field microscopy, and it showed significant protective and improvement effects on blood flow. So take a quantum leap into higher vibration at LeelaQ.com/Dave and claim your exclusive 10% discount.
Hey there, ice bath lovers. Do you want to take your cold exposure game up a notch with some contrast therapy? Well, you should, because cold plunges and contrast therapy can lower stress, up your immunity, and even help you sleep better. It works better than just cold therapy alone. Well, now you can do that with the new Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tubs by Master Spas. Whether you want to relax in a hot soak or get energized with a cold plunge, the Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tub has you covered. You can easily hop out of the hot water, get in the cold water, and go back and forth. When you do that, you get better results in less time, and that's what biohacking is all about. Go to chiligoattubs.com, use promo code DAVE500, and you can save $500 on any Chili Goat Cold Tub. I have one in my backyard. That's chiligoattubs.com, promo code DAVE500.
Today's cool fact of the day is about the largest muscle in your body. If you don't know what it is, it's actually your gluteus maximus. As they say, a baby got back. But what's the smallest muscle? This is one you probably haven't really thought about, so listen carefully. It's called the stapedius muscle, and of course it's in your inner ear, which is why you're listening carefully. It's about 0.05 of an inch, and it stabilizes the smallest bone in your body called the stapes, or stapes. I have no idea these Latin words. I have no idea how to pronounce it, but it looks like staples without the L. And it also helps protect you from loud noises or even the sound of your own voice. Believe it or not, I believe it's absolutely possible to train that muscle too. It's just hard. There's a couple of technologies that you do that, but we're not going to talk about ear muscles today because we got some bigger things to deal with. Today's guest, I'm so excited about this, is Charles Poliquin. Charles is a world-renowned strength and conditioning educator and coach. He's helped some of the world's most elite athletes completely kick ass with hundreds of medals, wins, and personal bests in 17 different sports. He's worked with the champions, Olympians, athletes, NHL, NFL, written a few books, one of which you're going to learn about today, and hundreds of articles about his techniques, decades of global training, and he runs Strength Sensei, a valuable online resource around like training performance for athletes and coaches. And he's also, just on a personal note, he's one of the first biohackers out there. When you look at the world of biohacking, there's the strength and conditioning side, there's the nutrition side, there's the medical side, there's the crazy biofeedback, there's military special ops and resources and all sorts of things. We're doing free divers, Wim Hof kind of, you know, polar bear people. And what Charles has been doing for longer than most of those people is looking at the details, the things that happen inside your body, things that happen outside your body, how the signal you send to your muscles changes your body, and come up with things that were absolutely pissing off the world that he said in the 80s that have been proven today to be true. So Charles, it's an honor to have you on. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, David.
So I'm looking at you now on the YouTube video version of this, and you're about, what, 55 now?
55 exactly, yes.
Can I like see your biceps? Like, I just, look at that. Like, you guys completely ripped. You've got about 16 years on me. So I'm hoping that I look as good as you, or heck, halfway as good as you when I'm 16, given I probably don't train nearly as much as you do. Why do you focus on maintaining muscle mass as you age like this? Like, what's important about that?
I mean, as early as the 80s in Boston, they did quite a few studies at Tufts where they looked at what could predict aging. And the number one anti-aging parameter that you could like is actually muscle mass. And the number two was strength, right? So it outshined cholesterol, high blood pressure, resting heart rate, max heart rate, and all these other factors. The thing is that there's a phenomenon called sarcopenia, which is death of muscles. And we lose strength, but one phenomenon now more studied by the Italians is actually dynapenia, loss of strength. So there's a lot of exciting research now on actually peptides that would slow down dynapenia and sarcopenia. So one of the ways to stay young is actually how much muscle mass can you retain and how much strength. So for the, the more you train, the less you age, basically. And then people say, okay, big muscle day. But the thing you have to consider is like when you have a large muscle mass, you also have more insulin receptor sites. And then we know that insulin is the hormone of aging. I mean, that's what you're all about. So if you have a lot of muscle mass, your ability to control your glucose, control your insulin is enhanced. And things like in the 80s, in the late 80s, will bring hips, bones, and whatever. But if you have strength, you have more balance. There's actually a very good study done on what was most important in Parkinson's patient. I was consulted on the protocol, but they asked, should they do balance exercise? Should they do aerobic work? Or should they do balance and weight training or balance and aerobic work? And it was one of like what I call a no shit Sherlock study, because the results showed that balance and strength training helped, but that, and I told them, I said aerobic work will worsen the patients, and it did. You know, and I said you don't need to do the study, but he says no, we need to. I said okay, right. So they did the study, and one of the problems with aerobic work is that it oxidizes the body. So if you look at studies on long-term athletes, the ones with the less cognitive ability are actually the ones who've done the most aerobic work in their lifetime. So cross-country skiers, rowers, if you compare their cognitive ability in their 70s compared to a weightlifter or a wrestler or sport volleyball, their brains are sharper. Okay, so I mean, I always tell my students, we're designed to throw a rock at a rabbit, not chase it. You know, we don't feed ourselves aerobically. So I think if people are now, there's been a change in attitude towards strength training, right? And then, and now we know, for example, to prevent osteopenia, which is loss of bone, strength training is very valuable. And the Finns are probably the best researchers on that.
Now, you said a couple of things that I want to dig in on. One of them is definitely around the peptides, and we'll get there. Yeah. But the The other thing you said was just that aerobic exercise isn't going to be good for your brain. I've seen some studies that kind of make me mad around telomeres that say if you're doing 50-mile runs, these ultra-long distance runners who I believe are kind of beating the crap out of their bodies, they get really long telomeres. Some interesting anti-aging stuff that Bill Andrews has talked about. I am in your camp firmly after many years of doing both cardio and weights. I do occasional very heavy stuff that bends my bones as much as I can. I have machines that bend my bones to cause bone density, and I measure it on DEXA and all that kind of stuff. But what about the studies that say like aerobic exercise does have anti-aging? Can you sort of tell me your perspective on those?
I haven't read those, so I'm not going to comment. But I've seen plenty that show that. For example, we did Sport Canada did research on osteopenia in female Olympians for the 92 Olympics. And what they found is that there was also a direct correlation between mileage of aerobic work and loss of bone. And that's been confirmed by other groups of researchers around the world. So maybe it helps with telomeres, but if you don't have a hip to support yourself on, so what? I think it's... I grew up in the 60s and it was, Cooper and aerobic was great and blah, blah, blah. And then they suddenly pulled a 180 on us on that. I think that it's, and if you look at mitochondrial damage or even gut lining damage from aerobic work, the results are not promising. So you got to look at the problem with science is that you have to take one variable and that's the one you measure and you can't look at everything. But also in real life, you can't look at the world through a straw. So, this may help this, but at the expense of what, right? So I'm not that's why I prefer studies on long-term athletes and then say, okay, let's compare a weightlifter to a wrestler. Let's compare whatever, right?
I did a lot of looking at this just for Headstrong, the new book on mitochondria that's really meant for the brain, just through the lens of what's going to grow the most mitochondria. Mm-hmm. And there's a set of research that says lifting heavy is going to get that for you. And then there's a set of research that says walking for 20 minutes a day is going to get that for you, but not running, not the intense stuff. So the recommendations are like move a little bit every day, which is going to stimulate that. And I use the Bulletproof Vibe whole body vibration because it's a little faster than going for a walk. And you get stimulation there. But then like lifting heavy, in my case, my goal isn't to be as muscular as you, but to be muscular, or I guess the New York Times called me almost muscular, which is from an anti-aging perspective, I think where I want to be. That was a compliment, I hope. But the goal is that. And that once a week or even once every 10 or 15 days seems to be enough as a non-athlete.
Correct.
Do you think that I might be under-training on strength if I'm maintaining the muscle mass I'm looking for?
The thing is that I would probably increase the volume to maybe twice a week.
Twice a week? Wow.
Yeah, because... but the thing is that... Are you trying to look at Conan the Barbarian? No.
Nah. Right?
But the thing I would say is that it would be better to have a short workout twice a week. Mm-hmm. So let's say 20 minutes twice a week and 40 minutes once every 10 days.
I only do 15 minutes once every 10 days, but I'm doing it with computer-driven feedback equipment. So I'm basically using the ARX, which I'm fighting against a winch. So it's essentially like isometrics against a moving plane. So you get really rapid muscle exhaustion. I don't think I could do a 40-minute workout on that machine. It would kill me.
Okay. But that's why we're not... you may want to up your frequency.
Okay. I'll play with that. I'm in my mid-40s. Let's talk about peptides. You said there's some new stuff about peptides. I put on 12 pounds of muscle in the last month with basically three workouts, which is unbelievable to me, but I'm using SARMs, the selective androgen receptor modulators. Are those the peptides you're talking about or something else?
Well, the peptide and the SARM is a different thing, but as far as, like, say, compounds, The SARMs, that's another thing that's very exciting. Like the RAD 140, it seems to be very efficient.
I haven't even tried RAD 140. I'm doing 4033 and 50156. By the way, for everyone listening, there's a blog post on Bulletproof about the different selective androgen receptor modifiers. They're all research chemicals. Mm. Some of them are probably banned by sporting bodies, but they seem to work really well. And the reason I did it was because one of them gives you a 50% increase in mitochondria. Like, I'll take that, thanks.
Yeah.
So anyway, some people, I don't want to be too technical without defining terms. Yeah. So go ahead.
Well, the thing is, for example, there's a peptide that I just got the paper where they took, okay, it's an animal model, but he on purpose damaged the sciatic nerve and then injected this peptide called cortigen. And there was regeneration of the nerve with that peptide. The interesting thing is that one of the reasons why we lose muscle mass is the damage done to the nerves as we age. So that compound, in my opinion, is the way to go. So last week, I had a conversation with Jean-François Tremblay at the University of Montreal. He's going to do a PhD thesis. And he was asking me, what protocol do you recommend? And I said, well, I'll go to retirement community, have people lift weights and inject bathyostatic water, and have the other ones have the cortigen and see what it does. So that apparently that's what he's going to do for his PhD. So danapenia is now the word in anti-aging in my field.
Danapenia, you said?
Dyna, like dynamic.
Oh, okay, cool. Okay.
So loss of dynamic, so loss of strength.
Sorry, I heard a glitch there. Danapenia has been a guest on the show. I'm like, he's like a gazillionaire in the UK. Like what? So sorry, completely lost me. He does anti-aging stuff, but okay, so this idea of loss of strength versus loss of mass. So being bulky and weak is actually probably worse than being less bulky and strong?
Well, one of the things is that you can't separate the nervous system from the muscle. So if you lift weights and get bulky, your nervous system gets a benefit, but you know, probably the ideal combination for anti-aging would actually be something that works at the nerve level and something that works at the muscle level, right? And then, so I'm quite excited about that, you know. And then I think in the next few years, we're going to see more and more papers that will study danapenia and sarcopenia together.
That is fascinating. When I did this thing with the SARMs, just because this is top of mind for me, I have a computer that's tracking my max, like the max I can lift on just the big four movements,
yeah,
squats and presses, mm-hmm, and things like that, pull downs. I did at least 12% higher on my max, and on one of them 20% higher just over the course of 3 weeks by increasing mitochondrial density.
Yeah.
I was completely blown away. Like that really exceeded my expectations. And my max before was reasonable for a guy my size, not insane, but not weak by a long shot. What would a listener today who wanted to reverse their muscle loss, maybe without going to SARMs, or wanted to increase their strength, what is the fastest way that they could go about getting even some kind of gains like that? Like, do they need to go to SARMs, or is this just a training thing?
Okay, I would say training would have more of an impact, but the SARMs in conjunction with training would be 2 + 2 = 5.
Okay.
Okay, so it has a multiplying effect. But I think that if you just did the SARMs and sat on the couch, it wouldn't be a 2. It would be a 0.2. Right? So you
a
do need that. Okay, so you do need that stimulus. It's like basically, you have a fire, and if you blow air on the fire goes. So the SARM would be the amount of wind that goes on the fire, but you still have to light up the flame. So adding wind will not do much for it. So, and then, you know, there's the MK-177 that shows promise. So I think this is theoretical, but I've done a lot of stuff theoretically in a practical way that's showed up to be true 30 years later. But
that's why I like you.
Yeah. So if you put a gun to my head and said, man, give me what you think is your best guess, I would say you would do 2 weeks of, let's say, 8 to 12.
Mm-hmm.
then change completely the exercise, change completely the speed and the rest.
When you say 8 to 12, you mean 8 to 12 reps and stacking the weight up? Or what for people so listening?
8 to 12 reps where you reach muscle failure. Okay.
Okay. So a single set of 8 to 12 until you can't do another one. All right.
Or multiple. But the point is that you work at that intensity zone, which would be about 70 to 78% of your max. And then another 2 weeks, I would change the SARM or change the peptide and then go heavy, like 4 to 6 reps. And then next month, start with another peptide and keep going like that. Because I think with these things is that there's the law of diminishing returns. Mm-hmm. And then one thing I tell people all the time is that strength training is like learning a foreign language. So you need repetition. So if I say the word to you in a foreign language once, you're not going to remember it. What research shows is you need to repeat that at least 6 times. But if you do a Swedish lesson every 10 days, the odds that you grow your Swedish will be low. So there's such a thing as frequency. But if you're doing Swedish lessons 7 times a day, you just say, my brain can't handle it. So there's a need for rest, there's a need for stimulus. And then the thing is that when you learn a foreign language, how do you know that you master the language is when you're funny in it, right? Because, you know, in the thing, for example, the sentence, did he really say it? If I type that on an email, it doesn't say, did he really say it? Or did it really say it? Or did he really say it? So just by putting emphasis on one of the words, the sentence doesn't mean the same thing at all, even though it's the same words, right? So with strength training, you have to put emphasis on different things. So that's how you build up your training vocabulary, right? And I think the peptides would be, the strength training would be the vocabulary, and the peptides would be grammar, right?
Wow, what a great analogy. That's cool, yeah. Charles.
Yes, thank you.
All right, so I think that answer for listeners is basically mix up your strength training a couple times a week. And if you did decide to use SARMs, you mentioned several there. I think I covered all, but I haven't talked about Cortigen on the blog post about SARMs. Have you written about SARMs? Are they in your new book?
No, but I just hired last night that guy, Tremblay from University of Montreal, to start writing on peptides and SARMs for me.
Okay, where can people find that stuff? If you like Bulletproof Radio, you've been listening for a while and you like the people, like Charles is like OG, like really knows more about biohacking and not the, there's definitely a bodybuilding or a muscle mass component to what he does, but there's body composition and performance are actually more behind what he does than just the muscle building stuff we're talking about now. So if you're not following him, what's your URL or where should people go to get your newsletter? I read it, like it's really good.
StrengthSensei.com.
StrengthSensei.com. All right.
And then, you know, I'm 55 now, so obviously my goal is a lot different than when I was 25. Like Muhammad Ali said, if you're 45, you're the same guy that when you were 18, you know, you wasted quite a bit of your life. So I have different goals, but I think that the peptides are very exciting, especially some of the stuff to regenerate collagen, cartilage, like the BPC-157. The BCP 57, the TB 500. I've seen a lot of my students who've, for a reason XYZ, they've torn something, let's say a meniscus, and they go on peptide therapy, and then their lives change because they can finally get out of pain, right? And I mean, there's one of the things I really like, unfortunately, they stopped making it in Austria, is Actovegan, which was.
Basically, how do you spell that? What is it?
Actovegan or VIN. Okay. It's a veal blood extract. And it pretty much everybody that's famous in the world of soccer or track and field has had Actovegan injections. And this stuff will regenerate cartilage. And I can swear by it because my doctor is from Luxembourg. And he prescribed it to me, and on my right shoulder, it completely regenerated the cartilage. But now only Lithuania makes it, so it's a bit harder to get. But if you're creative, you could get it.
That's interesting. I'll have to do some research on that. By the way, for you, if you're listening and you didn't catch that, all of these compounds will be in the show notes on the Bulletproof website. So, and there's a full transcript you can read as well. So if you want to go back and like take notes on this, that's cool.
I will send you a picture of the product. I can send that to you.
Oh, cool. That's really helpful. I'll have to find a way to get some and give it a shot myself. Now, I think that there's probably some discomfort from people listening. We're talking about using some research-grade chemicals, things that have been proven in labs, but we don't have 25 years of data to show that they're not going to make you grow new eyeballs or cancer cells or whatever else. Mm. But you have athletes using them. You've obviously used some of these things yourself. I've used them because I looked at the risk-reward, and the reward is pretty big, and the risk looks pretty low, given the mechanisms we know. How concerned about safety are you for all these things?
Well, I want to make a note here. None of my athletes have used them because they possibly could be banned any day, right? So,
okay.
But I have students, lots of students, non-athletes that have used them.
I hear you.
So I get a lot of feedback from the trenches on how great they are. But personally, I have used peptides and the Actovegan to regenerate soft tissue, and I think they work really well. I have no qualms about that. The thing, yes, there's not a lot of research yet, but it's one of these things, you know, how much risk are you trying to take from, put it this way, I'd rather be pain-free than not than be in pain, and that without using like oxycodone or anything like that, and at least regenerate the joint. But Actovegan, I first heard about it around 2004. And I can tell you, pretty much, there's a country, I will only use its initials, Germany, that where a lot of the soccer players have been treated by this doctor out of Munich with Actovegan. It's not a banned substance. They wanted to ban it. I've heard it in some traditions, but it's a miracle compound. I mean, I've seen a lot of retired athletes fly to Munich, get treated with that. Golfers are down there. But the compound is time tested. I've never heard of anybody for the last 15 years having any issues with it.
If a 50-year-old CEO who's you got an extra 20 pounds of gut, you know, flies all the time and exercises a couple times a week if he's lucky, and is looking at, all right, I don't like the flab, I don't like my muscle mass. Is it appropriate for guys like that to start thinking about incorporating peptides, or should they just go straight on testosterone replacement? Because you know, if you're 50, your testosterone is low anyway.
First thing you should do is get a full panel, right? Because a lot of times guys have low testosterone because they don't manage their insulin properly.
Let's go to that, yeah.
Okay, and the second most important factor, and some people think it is the most important factor, and we tend to agree, is sleep quality. Okay, if you look at, there's a lot of research on what does boost testosterone. But one thing that we know that works in 100% of subjects is deep sleep, okay? But people look at screens. I tell people, you want good sleep? Stop looking at the screen 3 hours before you go to bed, right? So just that, its effect on the pituitary gland and whatever else. Magnesium deficiency will disrupt your sleep. So I would say to your listeners, there's 7 cheap tests you can do, even if you don't have insurance and you pay out of your pocket. You can go to a place like any test, any Yahoo or whatever that brand is, and get write your own script. The thing that's most important, in my opinion, is HbA1c, so black-related hemoglobin. So if you say you only have $40 to invest in your health, check that out. And of course, the lower the percentage of that molecule, the healthier you are. But if you're 6.8, you're maybe diabetic after your next soda. That's the where you're on the edge. I mean, soda, like Joe Polish says, is liquid Satan, right? So so you get your HbA1c and you try to bring it down at least below 4.8. So that's the test. Vitamin D3 is linked to all causes of mortality. If your D3 is horrendous, you're more prone to depression. You're more prone to suicide. But also glucose and insulin management is horrendous. So you get your D3 status. Then I would measure my morning insulin, my morning glucose. So if you just look at math, in the U.S., they tell you your morning glucose should be between 70 and 99. Well, that's a stupid way to look at it, because for every milligram percent you're above 70, your risk of heart attack goes up 5%.
Above 70, not 87, which is the gold standard for anti-aging forever?
Kidding me?
So 70 is damned low, Charles. Wow.
So if you're 99, right, you got 145% more risk of a cardiac.
But your risk is so low. I mean, your risk is really low anyway on average. So 145% more, like relative risk, is kind of a, yeah, it's a small change, right? You
gotta, yeah, but the problem is the doctor will say you're fine.
That's a fair point. I get that. Okay.
So where would you rather have, 70 or 99, right? So, I mean, so not taking care of your health is a very sure sign of low self-esteem, yeah, right? So I would look at that. And then another test I would do is a reactive insulin test. Because sometimes you pass morning glucose, morning insulin, but you don't pass a glucose challenge test, right? And then, so we have glucose, insulin, reactive glucose, HbA1c, vitamin D3, and the last two are red blood cell magnesium. I didn't say serum magnesium, red blood cell magnesium, and then red blood cell zinc. Because if you look at it, a magnesium deficiency impacts four major systems. You can't make DHA properly if you don't have enough magnesium. Magnesium regulates how much cortisol you put out under stress. So people with high red blood cell magnesium are low stress responders, in the sense that you give two people the same amount of stress, somebody with a lot of magnesium reserve will handle it, and a person with poor magnesium will freak out. Okay? In French, we say, une tempête dans un verre d'eau, a thunderstorm in a glass of water. There are types of people that overreact to everything. That's a clinical sign of low magnesium. And zinc is known as the great organizer. So anything that has a fluid is regulated by zinc. Whether it's your tears or your semen, it's zinc related. So if you don't have, if you have poor zinc status, you also have poor immune status. And both magnesium and zinc are involved in insulin and glucose management. So that's why I love those seven tests. You do what I call the manifesting seven, and it's a cheap way to get it. And if you have more money, then you can look at your telomeres and whatever else.
Oh, yeah. But
for the listeners out there, and it's interesting because some of your listeners may be from Sweden, and to get a D3 test in Sweden, you got to fill a three-page questionnaire, right? So when I have Swedish friends that go over to stay at my house, they go to any test in time anyhow, and they get a full panel for about $600 that would cost thousands in Sweden, and you would have to go through days of paperwork. Right? So
my wife is a Karolinska trained Swedish physician who practices, well, she's not formally practicing, but she has a fertility coaching practice now. But yes, sometimes it's weird because Sweden is very progressive on some medical things. But like vitamin D in a dark country, you'd think they'd want to like hand that out at the 7-Elevens, but it doesn't make sense. So I love it that I said, you know, what should a 50-year-old do in order to, you know, put muscle back on? And instead of saying, you know, use SARMs, use peptides, use testosterone, you're like, get the core data about what's working and what's not working. So given, okay, you got a guy who probably doesn't sleep very well, or a woman, doesn't sleep very well, probably doesn't train very effectively. Lots of, you know, job stress and circadian stress because they're flying around and things like that. So what of those lab tests would you predict would be off in the average person who's, you know, carrying 20 extra pounds and, you know, not quite happy with how they look?
All seven.
All seven. Okay.
With years of experience, I found that those sevens are the cheapest way to do it, because I always have questions from my readers like, I can't afford this test. I can't, you know, and I said, okay, this is the cheap bastard way to find out how healthy you are. Right?
Cool.
So if a guy came to see me and all those values are out, I don't think there's a point to go on testosterone until you fix your insulin, right? Because the guy goes, okay, I need testosterone. So he goes to see a doctor that is willfully prescribing testosterone, gives him testosterone, but he's fat. So some of that testosterone will aromatize, and then he'll have nipples the size of Frisbees within a week, right? And he's going to squat to piss because the estrogen is way through the roof, right? So the first thing you need to do to improve health is to improve insulin sensitivity. So lose your 20 pounds. If you have the testosterone count of a Catholic mouse in a church, then go on testosterone. But the thing is that insulin is a castration and aging hormone. Okay, so learn how to eat, learn how to sleep, and there's so much data.
How do you recommend eating? I mean, I know the answer, but I think listeners would also just appreciate your take on it. So, you know, what should your plate look like?
My diet looks like, okay, I'm a big believer. Well, okay, rule number one, the diet has to suit your genetics.
Yep.
So how I eat is different than how someone should eat. So, for example, there's a lot of studies on the amount of copies of the amylase digestion genes. So we,
for starch.
For starch. So if you're from Kashmir, you can eat a lot of starch and stay lean. Okay. With my ethnic background, that does not work for me. If you're from,
and what's your background?
I'm French Canadian, but I have quite a bit of native blood. So for me, meat is great. So let's say if I wake up in the morning, this morning, what did I have? I had yak. Right? I love yak.
I love yak.
So what I do is I put goat butter, I roast some cashews, and then I throw in the meat, put some salt, some spices, eat that. And then I always believe that in the morning, for a guy like me, so that's what I do, but it may not work for you if you're from Vietnam, right? So the amount of the average percentage of carbohydrate rates worldwide is 40%. That's optimal if we look just at an average. But for a person like me, 25 is a lot. So, and I'd rather
25%, not 25 grams, right? You're not like ultra percent. Low carb or anything.
No. Okay. And then, and because I've got a lot of muscle mass, I can afford more carbs. So the rule with carbohydrates is you cheat, carbs have to be deserved. So if you're fat, you don't deserve carbohydrates. Maybe if you're 30% body fat, your carb intake should be 10 licks of a dried prune at Christmas. Okay, that's it.
So you would recommend radical carbohydrate restriction for fat people.
Correct. Okay. But up to a point, if you're from Serbia or Slovenia, you tend to have very low fat in the upper back, even when you're fat. And those people do terrible on low-carb diets for fat loss. But it's the quality of the carbohydrate. You should have the slow carbohydrate versus Twinkies, right? I mean, that's common sense. And Mark Twain said once that the problem with common sense is not that common, right? or if you do have common sense, the curse is the amount of people you have to deal with every day. So that's what I would eat. And then as a source of fat, I use MCT oil, I use fish oil. I may use 2 tablespoons of coconut oil. And like that, my brain's on fire, not inflamed, but like I can write, right. Coach, you know. And that
Are you looking for ketones from your diet? No, you're eating too many carbs to get ketones. So what's the MCT oil for? Is that to raise ketones?
To raise ketones, but also to make my insulin curve be as low as possible. Mm. Right? And for lunch, I typically go for a white protein. So fish, chicken, turkey. There's nothing magical about white, but you know, I've dealt a lot with hockey players, so like things that are simple. So red in the morning, white, so people don't have to worry. Right? So, and then that's what I would have, 2 or 3 vegetables, right? Or a salad. And then my dinner usually is another protein. Let's say I could have duck breasts. I like to have more fats. I'm not a guy that does very well on lean meat. Yak is a very lean meat, but because I use goat butter and all the other oils, it takes care of that. every day.
Is the goat butter because you're allergic to cow butter or because it has higher butyric acid in it?
That's the reason, but also you get taste fatigue. Sometimes I use cow's butter, but I find that for me, probably because of butyric acid, I feel better on goat butter.
Yeah.
And it's funny because everybody that comes here, right now we're filming videos for my upcoming membership site, and I had a guest, and he was the first time he ate yak with goat butter, and he's like, now he's a convert, right? So I use quite a bit of that. And then at dinner, that's when I would have starch for the day.
Okay.
So typically sweet potatoes or purple potatoes, or some type of starch, some rice. But most people should stay away from grains. And one thing that I found that's really useful is for people to get food intolerance tests. But there's only one lab that does a correct food intolerance test.
Which is the lab you recommend? I'd love to hear your thoughts.
You know what? I've tried every lab using players' insurance from different federations because they can afford whatever they want. The federation doesn't care. The only one that is valid is Cyrex Labs.
You like Cyrex? Okay, that's one I've been recommending for a long time.
I love Cyrex because the thing with Cyrex, they can tell you if your gut is compromised, which is the first series of tests you do. They also look at what does the food do to your blood-brain barrier. So, and I just had a class in Phoenix with Cyrex, and then we had every student did the test. And every day I get an email like, man, that test changed my life. Because, for example, I had a student from the Czech Republic, and she ate daily oats and dairy, right? Mm-hmm. And this girl was very lean, but there was no visible sign of an abdominal on it. And then a week after abstaining from all the red foods, she had deeply etched abs because of the inflammation created by the forbidden foods. So with Cyrex, what I've seen is that, for example, depression. A few years ago, I had periods of severe depression. Depression where I was a loser, I wanted to shoot myself in the face. Like I was this close. Mm-hmm. And it would only happen one day a month, every month. I said, you know, I can't have PMS. You know, I don't have a uterus or ovaries. So what was wrong? So I did the Cyrex lab. And it turns out I was the patient at that time with the worst wheat allergy they've ever seen. Highest probability. Wow. And why would I have depression? And I was also intolerant to cow products. And then, so I would fly home to see my daughter. And, you know, I'm not the type of guy to carry food in Tupperware to stink up the first class. So I would eat whatever there was. And I'd say, oh, I'm having one bun a month with one slice of cheese. So what? Well, it wasn't even so what. So within 12 to 16 hours, I would have these stupid thoughts. So Mondays, I would feel like shit, man. By Tuesday, I was fine. And so I did a Cyrex test, abstained from all the foods. And then 6 months later, I retested, and the wheat was still severely there, but I was not intolerant to eggs and dairy anymore.
Wow.
So because you get what you call cross-reactivity, right? So the Cyrex saved my brain, that's for sure. That's why when people say, I can't lose weight or there's something wrong, I don't know what it is, usually it's a food intolerance.
Yeah. My experience has been the same way, both personally. I would have my one cheat day on, you know, like a Friday night. I'd have a cheesecake or something. And I'd be okay on Saturday, a little tired on Sunday. And Monday, I was just a total jerk and a zombie. Mm-hmm. And it took me like a couple of years, and this is going back like 15 plus years, to figure out that it's what you did a few days before. And there was personality changes. Like I'm angry, like my middle finger on Monday morning is like really ready to go. And it's, you kind of feel like you're a little bit crazy or something.
Yeah.
Because like, why is this going on? It's environmental. It's what you put in your body, right?
Yeah. The two worst sources of stresses is what come from the mouth. What you put in your mouth and what comes out of your mouth, right?
So, well said. And if you put the wrong stuff in, you're going to not like what comes out. That's for sure.
Yeah. And then it's funny because I have one of my Russian clients got her test done and she goes like, it's amazing our brain has changed from just eating English foods. And it's interesting because some of the foods are thought as being healthy. For example, I've got a strong intolerance to quinoa. Mm-hmm. I would rarely eat quinoa, but every time I ate quinoa, I thought I ingested napalm. Like I said, why is my stomach killing me? And flax, I'm very intolerant to flax. So by dropping those foods, I mean, my health, and then joint pain went away.
Yeah.
Right? Because food intolerance is killer for your joints.
And I'm grateful that you're just going into those details. So one group of people would say, well, this guy obviously is weak because he can't eat everything on the planet. And if people are watching the video, dude, you're not weak. Like you kick ass on multiple levels. Your brain is sharp. You're in really good physical shape. And what's going on is you found the stuff that's biologically compatible with your system, and you avoid the stuff that makes you weak, right?
Correct. So, but the thing is that one of my friends is Serbian, and he's done the test. He's very lean. And if I ate what he ate every day, I'd be on welfare and depressed and unmotivated, right? And if he ate what I ate, he'd be sluggish, right? So the key is with nutrition is to find what works for you. But it's a very simple test. You can find it on my website. It's the breakfast test. Is I have people wake up, right on a scale 1 to 10, how their brain works, right? So they could say, okay, I feel like a 7. And then they do the meat and nuts breakfast, which is explained also on my site. And then an hour later, you should rate their brain. And most people will have an increase in their scores. I feel better. And some people say, actually, I feel sluggish. Then the next day, I make them do the opposite. So 70 to 80% carbohydrate breakfast. And then rate yourself before the breakfast and after the breakfast. A guy like me, if I had pancakes for breakfast, you know, I'd be waiting for my welfare checks. I would never work in my life. But some people thrive. So, for example, my daughter's mother could probably go to work drinking a liter of maple syrup before going to work, and it wouldn't bother her, right? But she has a high tolerance to carbohydrates. So to sum it up, you got to eat according to your genes. Not that you're Levi's, but your genetic profile.
One of the things that I did in putting together the infographic or the roadmap for the Bulletproof Diet was I'm like, look, there's a group of things that agree with most people, like the non-offensive vegetables that most people aren't allergic to. Most people can handle butter. Even if they're dairy sensitive, they can eat butter. And a few other like kind of simple foods that are high in nutrients. I'm like, just eat that for a while. You don't have to be low carb. You can eat some rice, but just the clean sources of starch that don't go up a lot. Do it for 2 weeks and see how you feel. And most people, to your point, like they're like, well, I feel great. And there's this huge list of suspect foods, lentils, nightshades, all sorts of other things in their grains where, you know what? Huge percentage of the population aren't going to do well. And unless you're going to go out and do a Cyrex panel, you're probably just not going to know. So the idea is eliminate all the potential suspects just to get a baseline. And for me, like the big difference was, wow, all this pain I've had my whole life, I've had 3 knee surgeries, it all went away, which was remarkable. And then you can add stuff back in. And of course, I have my lab tests and all that from different food tolerance labs, just like you. But most of them didn't pick out. For me, the nightshades are a big thing. So the whole point for listeners is it's okay if the guy next to you is eating something and you like that food and you just choose not to eat it because it's not compatible with your system. There's no weakness. And anyone who tries to shame you or tell you, oh, you have to eat that, like, just tell them to go screw themselves. Mm-hmm. Like, don't eat stuff that makes you feel crappy and act like a jerk. Like, that's what's happening to us.
So. Yeah, because, you know, if I could invent a pill that makes Krispy Kreme tolerable to everybody, I'd be a billionaire, right? So the thing is that one thing that people do notice when they start eating clean is that the so-called cheat foods start to have no value. Right, they go like, now I know why I stopped, right? I remember in 2006, I had to go back to Canada for 9 months and I had to drive a long time and I stopped. And it was one of those gas stations with no healthy food. I thought, fuck this, I'm gonna have. And I picked a chocolate bar that I used to like as a kid. After the first bite, I go, holy shit, I know why I stopped. I threw it in the garbage. But the thing is that as your cells get smarter, you can tell what works for you or not. You know?
Yeah.
And then, for example, most people, no, I don't know anybody that's ever been mugged by a dozen donuts, right? So they're all voluntary choices. It's some, one of these things we do have control. We don't have control over the electrons, but we do have control about the food we put in our stomachs. So, mm-hmm. And then what I tell people is that what is your body and your brain worth to you? And if you pick those M&Ms instead of picking up raisins and cashews, you're telling me you have low self-esteem. The most read article on my website is called The Myth of Discipline. And I blow away the myth of discipline because I don't think there's such a thing as discipline. It's whether you love yourself or not.
Mm.
So if you love yourself, you make the right choices. If you have low self-esteem, so if you say to me, I really like to eat 2 dozen donuts a day, and I'm a recovering Catholic, I'm not going to put guilt or shame on you, but I'm going to tell you, you prefer your taste buds than having a well-functioning brain. That's your choice, but it's not a matter of discipline.
Yeah. You and I are both focused on this cognitive function, and you said something that's controversial, but something that Dr. Perlmutter and Dr. Amen, two very well-known neurologist types who are friends and guests on the show, they said the same thing, but I think you might have been the first one to say it, that the link between IQ and fast food consumption. What's your take on that?
Oh, okay. Well, there's a very good researcher out of Calgary, Richard Johnston, who all he did was he measured the amount of Kentucky Fried Chicken outlets there were per capita. So it'd be an indirect way to measure trans fats consumption. And there's an inverse correlation between the amount of KFCs and your IQ.
Oh, no. Right. Trans fats and MSG, they both are going to jack your brain in every way.
Yeah.
So you mentioned you ate your grain and cheese thing once a month and made you feel bad. I know people who are like, well, I'm not drinking, so I had insert name of junk food place here. How often is okay? Is it okay to have fast food like that?
Okay. I think, you got to look by. Let's say if you have 4 meals a day and you have 28 meals a week and one is cheat, I don't think it's going to be that bad because you have 27 that are good, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's not 100% commitment. So if you want 100% results, it's 100% commitment. But I don't think that that meal is going to destroy the other 27.
No, it's not.
So, and I think one thing that I find successful as a clinician is to allow people to have I prefer to call it a refuel meal than a cheat meal,
mm-hmm.
or a permissive meal than a cheat, because cheat, implies Catholic guilt. So I don't like that. So, and then I tell people, what I do is that on purpose, I tell them, eat the worst shit you can think of that you really love. And people say, like, what do you mean? I said, if you want to park a tent at Mrs. Fields, and eat cookies for 24 hours, eat cookies for 24 hours. And then what I make them do is I make them train the next day. their muscles are full of glycogen. They feel good. They retain water. They put weight on the scale. But as soon as they do certain movements, they go, oh, shit, I got so much elbow pain, or I got knee pain, or I'm so stiff. And I go, dude, that's the food you ate yesterday. So next week when we do the permissive meal, let's try to say sticky mango rice instead of donuts, right? And then, but I think people learn better from experience
mm-hmm.
than from verbiage and even charts. So when they feel it, then it's a much easier pressure point to hit.
Well said. I recommend after the 2 week bulletproof diet thing, we avoid all these things, have pizza, beer, and ice cream, and just wake up the next day and see what you're made of. And I think that's why for the average listener, I don't recommend eating garbage once a week because the recovery time is too high for you. It takes a lot of willpower and effort. But if once a week you do higher carbs, you might even, God forbid, have a little sugar that day, but not like deep fried sugar bombs, with glyphosate frosting. the difference in how you live your life is measurable. Like I think that the angle of your ascent, it will be measurably better.
But I think, you know, a good kick in the balls or a punch in the face teaches you the best in the slap.
So it does.
So, you know, if you have a kick in the ball, meals of pizza, ice cream, and beer, the next day you'll feel like shit. And the next weekend, if we say, okay, let's try other sources of carbs that will not bring in inflammation, then they realize nobody hit them on Saturday night and they feel good. And then they could say, okay. But I find that when you go too low on carbohydrates for too long, your glycogen stores go down too much.
Yeah.
So I like to give people a refuel day. What's the frequency of refuel day? It depends on how much muscle mass you have. And also sociological factors. So for example, when I used to train a lot of NHL players, they would have a permissive day every fifth day. And two of my players says, is it okay if I have it Saturday night? And I said, like, why Saturday night? Because my family, I got to spend quality time with them. This is the off season. And can I have cheesecake and wine that day? So they were actually doing it less frequently. I said, you know, go ahead. And it worked for those guys. They would rather have a permissive meal every 7 days and do it with their family than every 5 days alone, sort of thing. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So you got to look at those factors. You know, the key is progression, not perfection.
And, well said.
You know, yeah, so it's, you know, it's one step at a time. But the thing is that a really good book that I recommend to you, readership, is actually from Gretchen Rubin, Better Than Before.
Oh, yeah, she actually, yeah.
Yeah, it's probably something you should have on your podcast.
Absolutely.
I've listened to her, and I bought her books, and it explains a lot of things that I kind of figured out over the years, but I did not have a name for it, but she did have a name for it. Some people are upholders, and they'll do everything you do, and they're although so strict on some people, and there's people that will comply all the time, they don't do anything for themselves, and there's questioners, and there's, you know, rebels, or whatever. But the like for example, some people here could listen to you and I's advice on managing insulin, and because they're rebels, say, fuck these guys, I'm going to eat as much insulin producer. You know, so those guys are hard to convert. They will only convert if they convince themselves. So my approach is that, are you better than yesterday? That's what matters. You know?
Very important approach. In fact, I think if people walked away from this interview with just one thing, that might be the most important thing. Now, Charles, we're up on the end of the interview, which kind of makes me sad because I wish that we'd booked like 4 hours to chat because I think listeners would benefit from that. Maybe I can invite you on again.
Mm-hmm.
If you're listening and you want that to happen when we post this on Facebook and on iTunes, give us a lot of likes and share this with some friends and I'll definitely just, maybe we can do it in person too. It's always more fun to do that. But there's a question I want to ask you. I think you might have some really good insight here. And I've asked every guest out of more than 350 guests on Bulletproof Radio. And it's, if someone came to you tomorrow and said, look, I want to kick more ass at everything, not just in the gym, not just on the field, but I just want to be kick ass at life. What are the three most important pieces of advice you have for me from anything you've ever lived? The most important things.
Number one, what you appreciate appreciates. So you have to be grateful.
Gratitude, love it.
Okay, so the clothes you wore today, the vicinity, you chose them, right? So we live in a country where we can pick the clothes we want, you know, for a large percentage of it. But I think that if we, every day you have a grateful log and you make a list, but it's not like, I'm grateful for my dog. And, you know, try to come up with three different things. And you could lower the bar on gratitude. So let's say if you're traveling and I'm in a Radisson hotel and the bed sheets are better than staying, let's say, at the Hilton, so I'm grateful I'm sleeping in a great bed. I could do something as menial as that. Mm. But it's when you start to appreciate the little things that things change. And when you appreciate things, things change for you, right? So, for example, you get a big check. You should write, I really like that big check I just got today. And then you'll have more big checks. I appreciate the progress I made in the gym today. You'll make more progress. So what you appreciate, appreciates. Number two, I would say, if I were to relive my life, and I'm giving this advice on my deathbed, sleep better. I think sleep is the most underrated health factor in people's lives.
That's the third time you said sleep better, not sleep more. And that's another thing that's correct. Really interesting about you, because I am so in that camp with you. All right, on the next episode with you, it won't be the next one, but next time I interview you, I want to go deep with you on sleep, because that's one of the areas where I've spent a lot of time writing. And I know you know some stuff there we didn't get into. So we're going to save that for number two.
Okay. All
right, and what's your third answer to that big question?
Stay away from grains. Doesn't matter what genetics you are, right?
Because
if let's say you make me emperor of all galaxies tomorrow, right? I can't force people to not have to have a grateful log or to go to bed early or whatever, but I would ban grains. There's one problem with that. 58% of the world population would die within a week because that's the biggest calorie intake. But let's say ban grains in the top GNP countries of the world would have a huge impact because grains rob you of minerals, they create inflammation. You know, I mean, some genotypes do better, but if we went grainless as a society. Also, the brains would work better. I mean, I have, you know, a few private Facebook pages, and I see questions. I'm going like, that guy must have had pancakes for breakfast. Because there's a good study from Harvard, all you eating pancakes for breakfast lowers your IQ 20%. So, I mean, temporarily. But the thing is that in a society that's so carb addicted, we can't get people's mind to function properly. If everybody was just 20% more efficient with their brain, our whole society would change.
That is my experience, and we're certainly in alignment there. Now, you have a book that you're going to release for just a couple weeks for people to listen to the show today. Similar to what you did with Tim Ferriss when you were on his show. Tell listeners the kind of stuff you put in this book and what they have to do to get it.
Okay, so what they learn in the book is muscle loss. Like, these are things I really like to live principle-based. So I say, like, often should you train? So I give all the why first, and then I give you the how. So if you don't give a crap about the why, you could do the how. So there's detailed training plans, and I created a private Facebook page for it. So when you buy the book, we invite you to the private page, and there you can ask your question. And one of the big features, people say, "Wow, I read the book, and now people, the strength sensei himself is answering my questions." And with the book, we give you how to eat, we tell you how to prepare your brain for the workouts, and so on. And I basically have a consumer's guide to supplements, because there's millions of supplements out there and there's a lot of fraud, right? So I tell
you. Oh, yeah.
So I tell
it's
you,
a huge problem.
Huge problem. So I tell you this. And then I think that every single reader said the biggest advantage for this $47 they invested is how much return they had on it. So that's great positive feedback. I listened to Schwarzenegger in a private VIP seminar in Melbourne. And, you know, he said, you have to break the mirror and look who's behind the mirror if you want to make a change in society. So it's the first time I've written a book on a detailed book on how to build muscle mass. I've written a lot of books on strength training, but this one would be more for your listening audience, because they're trying to fight aging, but the information is still applicable, or highly applicable, in fact. And then I think your listeners will benefit quite a bit from it.
Beautiful. So we'll hook all of you up with that. And Charles and I are definitely in the same vein. There are definitely some differences. I encourage you, as budding biohackers, to take a look at what works for you, which is most important. By the way, I forgot. I was going to mention earlier in the show, Charles, with MCTs versus brain octane at the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine a couple weeks ago. I presented a a new study looking at ketone formation from coconut oil, which raises ketones the same as fasting for 8 hours, like very modest rise. MCT oil, just the generic source with the mixed types of oil, raised ketones about twice coconut oil, but the brain octane oil was between 4 and 5 times higher.
Wow.
So you can get to that 0.5, and that's why I do that brain octane versus MCT, even though it's in the category of MCTs, it's a subcategory, but you're getting a lot more ketones before you hit the bowel tolerance disaster pants level. So I'm just bringing that up because I know a lot of people listening are like, well, if I go read Charles's stuff and he tells me to drink lemon juice in the morning, which, by the way, I like in the morning, but I don't always talk about it. And whatever other tweaks, it's all good. Like, you're allowed to go out and do what works for you. And I got to say, Charles has an incredible reputation and an incredible body of experience, especially working with athletes. He's focused at least as much as I am on aging because he's got 10 more years on me. And has looked at some of these things, and I'm really getting into that.
Really welcome. I'm very pleased. First of all, I thank you for being on, but I'll try it out, the brain octane fuel. You're stimulating my brain on that one. I'm always looking for
I'll send you some.
The latest bioact, but I appreciate being on the show and looking forward to the next one. Thank you.
Thanks for being on the show. It was my pleasure.
The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.